This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Now, we don't have our aviation crash expert. We needed him back again today.
We needed political crash expert.
We thought we were going to have a couple of weeks break from aviation, but no, there was another plane
in Taiwan. Yes, it was an awful experience. Incredibly captured on footage, but what a tragic loss of so many lives.
Yeah. And to turn off the second engine so that they didn't have any engines. It sounds quite unusual. Anyway, I'm sure Ian will have a theory on it.
So yeah, when he's back.
So stay tuned. We'll come back.
We have a very clued-in correspondent who we'll have back very soon on Escape Pod and Joy 94.9. We have, of course, the ability for you to ask questions or help set the agenda. You're part of the community, as are we, and we're all working together. So if you want to pop in your two bobs worth, SMS us 0427 Joy 949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear your travel stories in Gaylandia. Now, Joe, you were telling me before about Indonesian Tupperware, weren't you?
Oh, I was. Yes, I was just inbound tourism.
Yeah, place to keep your nasi goreng.
Yes, and your
sambal olek.
Yes, sambal olek. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it would still stay in the Tupperware.
Oh yeah.
You'd need Shannon Lush in close quarters to tell you how to get that stain out. But yeah,
it's all lemon juice.
It is lemon juice or vinegar or something. So I think what we've got happening is the largest inbound Indonesian incentive tour group from Indonesia Tupperware are hitting Melbourne this week. So just watch out. There could be a whole lot of hipster cafes that had mismatched salt and pepper shakers that might have a makeover.
So if you hear that polite, what do they call it in America? The Tupperware burp. It might not be people being gassy. It might be them sealing up a meal.
It could be, or just rearranging the cutlery.
And this week we heard what the safest cities to travel for women are, which is very exciting.
And who's top of the pops?
Copenhagen. They're top of the pops for everything at the moment, and I wanted to bring it up because I think they're doing a darn good job in Copenhagen. And I think
what do you like about them so much, the Danes?
Part of my family heritage. They've got a Taswegian with a big hat. They do a lot of things well, but they don't do anything overly flashy, and I quite like that. I spent, as you know, a long time in Dubai, and they're very quick to tell everybody about anything good they do, including getting in and out of a car, whereas the Danes just keep doing things good for their people.
Tasteful design,
great restaurants, as you well know.
Yes, Mr. Noma.
Yeah, but also just the way that they look after their people socially. They educate people. They make sure that weaker parts of society are strengthened by the state. And
because they do ask that people pay taxes there. That's one way that they try to pay for the services.
And the rich people have to pay the taxes as well.
Yes, you and I could go on Q&A next Monday night.
And give all our opinions, whether they like it or not. Denmark doing another good thing. I mean, Ottawa, Auckland, Helsinki and Hawaii and all these other places that we kind of know. But I just wanted to tip my hat to the Danes and especially the Copenhagenanians for constantly doing a really good job at everything in their quiet Scandinavian way and doing it in beautifully designed shoes at the same time.
We're going to have to ask our studio guest if she's been to Copenhagen.
We certainly will. Let's introduce our studio guest. Good afternoon, Julieta Jamieson.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to get you to say that again.
Oh, good afternoon. There I am.
You sprung into action. Here. Sorry, I had you on the wrong microphone.
I was just having a little snooze over here.
Yeah, you're in the cone of silence in the escape pod. So tell us, have you been to Copenhagen?
I have been to Copenhagen. And do you know
what? Did you feel as a woman that was a really safe place to be?
Yes, I did. I found Copenhagen a little... it's controversial. I found a little bit annoying. I've got to be honest. It's just almost too much cool.
Too many
lovely pairs of glasses and a few too many skivvies for my liking. I much prefer Sweden to Denmark because the Swedes are a little bit rock and roll and you get...
Don't get me started.
Oh, I'd love to get you started. That sounds fascinating. I stayed in a hotel in Sweden where there was a heavy metal band staying and there were all these sort of heavy metal groupies in the foyer and it was crazy and fantastic and just wonderful. So, I was very tired, admittedly, when I was in Copenhagen, so that could have had something to do with it. But a lot of architectural glasses.
Yeah. not drinking ones, you mean?
Yeah, the ones on their faces.
Yeah. Yeah, I will give it up. North Germans are the same. The Spectacle Eye there. Yeah.
Exactly.
It reminds me I've got to get my eyes tested this week.
But not by a German. So, Julietta, let's talk about your career. You're a travel writer, a lady authoress.
I prefer that, actually. It sounds a bit more dangerous. I like it.
So, travel writing, let's talk about how you got into this. We, Escape Pod, we love to interview people who put words on paper about travel. How did you get into this? What was the spark that started your career in that path?
I'd been a journalist for a long time, and I'd worked as a correspondent in the States for a few years for Rupert's Evil Empire.
Oh, what was your topic?
I was everything. I was Los Angeles correspondent, so I covered everything sort of west of the Mississippi, including...
So the flyover states.
Yeah, we did. So I did crime as well as a lot of celebrity. It was really fabulous. But it was... Or both. In the case of
Venn diagram. Venn diagram has quite a bit of overlap.
Yes. And so that, you know, that was amazing. I saw a lot of the United States. And then a few things happened. I was editing a magazine. I started a magazine for Pacific Publications. That sort of went pear-shaped for various reasons. I did a lot of soul-searching, went to Italy, and realised that I'd always been absolutely obsessed with Travel and Leisure magazine. And that was the first time I wrote a real travel story. And, I was fortunate that I had connections. So I sent it to someone, and it was published, and... And then I was fortunate enough to be a travel editor for a while.
Can we go back to Travel and Leisure magazine? Describe the publication for those who don't know.
Right. So Travel and particularly the US edition is a glossy, not just a glossy, beautiful travel magazine, but contains some of the finest writing that you will read.
It's a bit like Vanity Fair for travel, isn't it?
That's a really good way of putting it. And there's one story that really sticks out in my mind, and it was about a small town in the United States. That's the name of it. Which
Detroit.
Escapes. It wasn't Detroit, but it was a flyover.
Right.
And it was about this person going home, and the writing just made me really, really want to go there. So I read it voraciously, mostly for the writing. And the thing about why I write is I try to make sense of the human condition. It sounds highfalutin, but it's true. And travel is a great way to do that. Travel is a great way to learn about humanity.
Why?
Because you see it in all its different forms, and also you find out about yourself when you travel. And I think that that's probably the key to it.
Yes, if you're not sure what stresses you out...
Get on a plane.
Take a trip.
Yeah, go to LAX.
Yourself. Yeah, yeah. Good Lord.
Tom Bradley International.
Yeah. So, sorry, I'm just having US airport flashbacks. So that was where the spark came from, looking at other people who were doing fantastic things.
Pretty much, it was a big part of it.
And so how did you get into this? Of course, you said had the connections. Did you pitch a story and then get on a plane, or did you turn around and say, I did some cracking things, can I write a story about it?
I was sitting in a hotel in a place called Urbino in Italy, and, you know, I teach travel writing as well, and I tell this story because this is how you start. You know, writers write. That's the fact of it. The difference between somebody who wants to be a writer and a writer is that the writer writes. So I was sitting on the bed and there was this amazing view out the window, and I just put pen to paper and started describing it, and then thought, right, I'm going to do this. I'm actually going to write it. And I felt really, you know, I'd been a feature writer for a lot of years, and it was really quite confronting to send it. You know, would you like my story?
Was that because you had to come up with the momentum? Internally, and it was...
That's exactly it. I think that was exactly it. And I realised that it was something that I really wanted to do. You know, when you feel a bit nervous and shaky about something, it's a sure bet that it's hitting some kind of nerve with you, I think.
And it gives you that nervous energy, doesn't it, that actually sometimes propels you beyond the logical hurdles.
Yes.
And you just get on with it.
That's exactly it, yeah. And that's why I think people... You know, who aren't journalists per se should feel encouraged that they could potentially be, you know, travel writers. There is a particular travel editor who yells at me every time I say that because she doesn't like to be inundated with pictures from people that she doesn't know. And she always says, don't encourage people. But I think there's plenty to go around. I live by the motto that in this world there is plenty to go around. So, you know, everybody has a right to express themselves.
And do you write from a travel perspective to inspire and to encourage people to go, or do you write to paint a picture, or is it a bit of both?
I think it's both. I think inspiration is one thing, informing people is another, and that's essentially the job, you know, to inspire and inform.
Don't tell AAPT that.
Okay. Is that their logo or something?
Oh, I don't know. Just the tennis and too many ad
boys. Oh, okay.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
So let's hear who Julieta is. Obviously, she's an orthatrix.
Love it.
Travel writer extraordinaire.
Exactly.
Lover of tweeting.
Yes.
We love Twitter.
Love Twitter.
Yeah.
I think it's great for writers. You know, if you can't say it in 140 characters.
Don't say it at all.
Exactly.
Indeed. It's like haiku.
So how often do you run your courses to teach people?
Well, I have been doing it with the Australian Writers' Centre, and they were reasonably regularly. I'm actually doing one next weekend just on feature writing, but it takes up a lot of energy for me. I'm not somebody who can do things by halves in any way, so I've decided this year to not do it this year, just to get a bit more writing done and to get another book on the boil, because my energies have been somewhat fractured. Having said that, I'm studying a photography course at the moment as well, so that does, you know, there's only so many things you can do.
So you've got your head in a lot of different spaces.
Yeah, but it's great. I love the mentoring. I love seeing the spark when people realise what it's all about, and you know how to do it and how to approach it, and why a story needs a hook, and why a travel story is not just what I did on my holiday. It's something quite different to that.
And what does make it different?
Pretty much that. Excuse me. The idea of a hook, which is you have to, you know, Paris has been written about a million, trillion, bazillion times.
Sung, tweeted.
Everything, you know. So
burped.
I'm sure. Probably played on the spoons. Yeah. And so finding your way in, finding that little thing that makes, number one, makes a travel editor want to publish it. Number two, probably makes it timely in some way. And three, makes people want to read it. Gives people something different. And that is the absolute trick to good travel writing is going somewhere like Paris or Rome or London and finding something new and, you know, a fresh way into it.
Yeah, seeing something through your eyes.
Yeah.
With all of your experience.
Yeah, and with
and
any
what you brought to it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what's a really good example of that? So if people are listening, budding, and they want to do their own blog or they want to do something when they're next travelling, what approach do you suggest people consider? I know it's going to be personal to them, what they bring through it, where they go, and how they travel through the experience.
Yeah.
But what are the things that you would suggest people think about to get those perspectives or to find their own?
Always be looking for that something a little bit different is the first thing. Like just and take notes and take business cards, because you can always follow up with people later. But a good example would be, for instance, we've got Valentine's Day coming up, so anniversaries and those kinds of things are always good things to hook your story to. So a couple of years ago when I was in Rome, I was taking notes on, you know, romantic places in Rome and away from the normal Spanish steps and et cetera, like lovely
locks
parks.
On locks bridges on that are going to make more collapse.
And, you know, little restaurants and things. So those sorts of anniversaries are really good things to hook travel stories to. And if there are events coming up, if for instance, you travel for, you know, for a pride somewhere in the world, then have a think about writing a story for the following year for one of the appropriate publications. Like take notes, take photos, you know.
And do you think, is it hanging around the tourist jam where you get those ideas, or do you think it really takes going off the beaten track and discovering something that hasn't been written about in a big city?
I am a fan of the tourist jam, and I'll tell you why. That is because these things are the greatest hits for a reason. The Eiffel Tower is popular because the Eiffel Tower is fantastic. So,
what do you find fantastic about it?
Oh, it's just
the wroughtness.
Girders.
The love a girder.
It's in a great spot.
It's the history. It's a great spot. It's iconic. It's gobsmacking. I remember the first time I saw the Eiffel Tower. I was coming on the bus from Charles de Gaulle, and there was this thing sticking out.
It's like, I'm here.
I'm here. Yeah, there it is, you know. And it's, you know, iconic is an overused word now, but it really is iconic. It is one of those things I think that you should see because it's completely surprising when from all different angles when you're there.
And with the lights on it, they did what, not even 10 years ago? Was it 10 years ago they put the... The disco ball lights disco all over ball. It was about 10 years or so. It really changed it at night.
Maybe it's 15. Yeah. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, it's a little while ago now. But it really changed its presence at night. Instead of being that eloquent, elegant, understated thing, it's really an eye-popping Dubai-style performance.
Yeah, but that's interesting from the Parisians too because they're, you know, they
But they like Big Macs now, so they can shut up. It's not all about them anymore.
So, Julietta, how many stories would you have to get published, you know, say in a 12-month period to actually consider yourself making it as a travel writer?
That's an interesting story. Certainly there's a society called the Australian Travel Writers Association, Society of something, and they have it. I'm not a member, that's why. They have a criteria that you must have, you know, four or something. But for me, I make a living from it. So it's more about, for me, being able to pay the bills. So I also write regular columns for Fairfax newspapers. I write the front pages of the Traveller lift out every week, and I write the travel deals section, which is, you know, great.
How do you fortify yourself to do that one?
Oh, that's a very, very good question.
Paying your way before you say anything.
Yes. No, it's I tell you one thing about it is that it is always, it's always fascinating to see what new product is out there. I really am genuinely interested in that. And also there's still that part of me that is pure writer, not just travel writer. Mm. And I have this sort of strange problem-solving approach to writing sometimes where I get a real kick out of having to put 600 words into 50 words. I really find it interesting. It's just, it's like doing crossword puzzles.
How do you do that?
Me.
Just unpack it and then prioritise?
That's exactly it. Yes, unpack. That's what I do. I unpack it and I prioritise and it's just edit down, whittle down and make sure you've got all the essentials. And, you know, there's a lot of legalities and stuff in it as well.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it can get a bit trying because you've got to be so incredibly accurate. But again, as you say, it certainly pays the rent and it's fascinating. And I get to tell all my friends when really great things are happening, like Rail Europe have a sale on Eurail passes at the moment, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I always say travel writer, not travel agent. However, sometimes I can't help myself.
So how often do those unique things come up? Is it ad hoc or is it very seasonally driven?
Most of it is seasonally driven.
Right, of course.
But sometimes, you know, for instance, hotels may have excess space and so they'll go on sale, or a new hotel might open and they'll be offering some ridiculous bargain. And yeah, so it's, but mostly it's seasonal. Like the crew, there's early birds on tours, there's early birds on cruises, there's
cruising's just becoming big again, isn't it?
It's massive. Australians love it.
But I read, you know, an article in the food edition of The New Yorker. I was doing some catch-up reading the other day. The statistics on the food and beverage that goes on board, and depending on the nationality of most of the passengers, is phenomenal.
How do you mean? What?
Tons and tons of, you know, French fries and bottled water, and it is not at all a sustain. I mean, you may not be unpacking and packing your suitcase, and you may not be using a lot of air miles, but my goodness, your footprint is substantial. Being
that might
on
be
one
a good
of those,
show.
I was gobsmacked. I actually couldn't quite even contemplate that much alcohol in one.
It's
spot.
Extraordinary.
It's like the royal family lunch.
The Queen Mum's dead now. That bill's gone down.
Yeah, the bathtubs have drained of gin.
I went on the Queen Mary, and you know what? I loved it. I interviewed the chef, and the figures on the amount of food that they go through, and watching that kitchen in practice at the height of dinner, he is that, you know, I always say don't trust a skinny chef, but this man runs something like 18 kilometres a night up and down the stairs through the kitchen.
And they've got their own special passageways, don't they?
They do.
No passengers allowed, just so they can get to
and
from.
So they can bolt. This man was amazing. But they have their gala dinner night, and it's, you know, lobster or their beef bourguignon or beef Wellington or whatever the hell it is. And I said to him, oh, does anybody ever have both? And he said, all the time. And I said, and what nationality would those people be that say, I'm going to have both? Australians. Surf and turf, mate.
Oh, of course it's a surf and turf.
Well, it's also just I'm having both. I paid for them, I'm having both.
Yes.
And it's smorgies.
Yeah.
It's floating smorgies.
And it's something like people gain a pound a week or something of weight while they're on a cruise.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, your normal routine is taken out of circulation and you're sitting down.
There's only so many places you can walk.
And particularly the really luxury cruises like Seabourn or, that really high end. You get up in the morning and there's somebody offering you a cocktail as soon as you walk. You know, if you walk past the pool, they're trying to give you the cocktail of the day. And, you know, there's lavish food. It's actually very hard to control yourself. And it is the curse of the travel writer that, you know, the kilos will...
Wow, yeah.
So how do you actually keep fit and well?
Well, I'm trying to lose 12 kilos at the moment.
So you're not going on a cruise?
No, but you have to actually be careful to taste things rather than eat everything that is put in front of you.
You're becoming a bit of a food writer.
Yeah. A big part of the job is food and wine writing as well.
Well, we're going to talk about Italy and gelato in a short while, but I want to firstly say thank you very much to Daryl. Daryl SMS'd in on 0427 Joy 949 and said, we were talking about the Eiffel Tower being lit up 15 years ago. He said, hi guys, what about when Andrea Citron lit up the tower? It's something I had forgotten all about. And thank you, Daryl, because I just Googled it. And there are some beautiful images from the late 20s to the mid 30s. And the Eiffel Tower was dominated by Citron advertising. And it... I think it might be the romance of the old copper plate kind of photographs that I've just had a look online. But beautiful job they did. Tacky in a way, but also really interesting in a 30s kind of a way.
Possibly not good when a world war's happening.
Well, at least it wasn't Mercedes-Benz.
No.
Or Audi.
And I guess because it was built for promotion, it was never meant to stay.
No, it's for the World Expo.
Yeah, for the World Expo.
So I'm still going. Well, thank you, Daryl, for helping us with that trip down memory lane. Great photos. I haven't seen them for years.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thank you very much for Daryl, who's also let us know that dear Mr. Citron also paid for the electricity, which I hope he did on the Citron-lit Tour Eiffel.
Tell you what, I bet Katy Perry didn't pay for the electricity at the Super Bowl for her extravaganza.
That was extravagant, yeah.
Goodness.
I think she was paid for that gig.
I think she was.
Kathy Perry.
Who wouldn't have been to get up on top of one of those robotic lions.
I didn't watch it all. It was okay.
Goes for 12 minutes.
I know. Like Grace Jones' songs. you're on Escape Pod today with Mark and Joe. It's currently 33 degrees in the city of Melbourne, and I don't think it's going to get any higher, but the weather agency tells us it's going to get to 35. So still got a bit of grunt in the day heat-wise. So hope you're slipping, slopping and slapping wherever you are, or just keeping cool, or following Joe's advice and putting your undies in the freezer.
Such good advice.
Such good advice. We're joined by Julietta Jamison, travel writer, bon vivant.
Yeah, bon vivant. I'll take that
not
as well.
That, yeah.
Keep them coming.
Life liver.
Yeah, that's it.
All that
yep,
stuff.
Yep.
Tweeter.
Yeah, tweeter.
Orthatrix.
Yeah.
All those things.
Current student
What'd
of photography.
You say?
Globetrotter.
I am globetrotter.
Okay.
I do trot around the globe quite a bit.
So, Julietta, in your travel writing experiences, what were the things that really stood out from, I could write the shizzle out of this?
Italy, I guess.
Yeah.
Everything comes back to Italy for me because I adore
All
it.
All roads lead to Rome.
It's true. Oh, there you go. It's because I find it so inspiring.
Is it the depth of history and the breadth of history throughout Italy?
Yeah, I think so. It's
Roman
also,
through to...
it's the light It's just sort of everything. It's the most extraordinarily jam-packed with beauty place that on earth for me so far that I've seen.
And you been to Geelong?
Look, I went to Geelong with trepidation, fearing that I had been deceived that
set
Rome.
Up.
But then, but no, Rome won over Geelong. But actually, I felt that with Madrid. I hadn't been to Madrid, and I was really worried that I'd get to Spain and love it more than Italy. But it wasn't the case.
Mm. Still lovable.
Oh, God, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous.
So you were talking very much when you wrote your book about Lord Byron, and we're going to touch on that a bit more. Food seemed to come up as part of the texture of the travel experience. We did touch on that earlier about how food is a big part of it. Tell us about gelati. Now, the dear receptionist, Simon, is of Italian heritage, and he's just SMS'd us in as well, talking about his favourite gelati experience in Rome, and he was just to the, he said, to the right of the Trevi Fountain, but doesn't know where, not quite sure. He was there a couple of years ago, years ago.
Oh, I actually think I know the one he means. Yes, right. There's a couple of
make,
branches
make
of
the
it.
Germans pay 50 euros for it.
Well, they don't, you know. That's the thing.
Not if you stand up.
That's it. That's the trick.
Yeah.
Stand up. But, you know, there's so gelati for me is just so synonymous with pleasure in Italy. And it's taken as afternoon tea and or in the evening sitting in the square. It's there's just something very old-fashioned and romantic and gentle about the taking of gelati, I think.
So it's the culture as well as
the flavour. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I had long conversations with Italians about favourite, you know, flavours and this young man demanding that I go to this gelateria across the square and try the pine nut. And I'm like, I don't want it. Doesn't sound
good to
me.
You don't want pinoli.
Yeah. Doesn't sound good to me. He said, you go. And so I did. And I went, no, you know, lemon or strawberry is my preference.
Classic.
Thank you. Yeah, I like the classics.
Right. Okay, so if you were to endorse a food tour of Italy, where would you start and what would be the path?
Oh, that's intriguing.
You can tell it's getting closer to dinner, can't you?
Yeah. And you know what? Most people go to Pisa and just see the tower and the cathedral and then think it's a, you know, it's a toilet, basically.
Ah, but there's some very interesting furniture in the restaurants in Pisa.
And Pisa is a fascinating city. It's an I spent 3 weeks there a month there as part of this book that I wrote called Me, Myself and Lord Byron, where I followed the travels of the poet Lord Byron around Italy. I know, the best idea I ever had. But the food there is incredible. So you've got the Tuscan food of the land and then you've got the seafood coming in. Honestly, the best food I've ever had in Pisa, and I would recommend that. I think that whole sort of line from Pisa across to Venice, so through Verona and Bologna and Ferrara, I mean, you know, you've got oils
where the boot
and
leaves mainland.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, and you know, you've got vinegars and cheeses and all sorts of things just straight across there, and it's, you know, there's a train that goes right across as well, so. It is my favourite part of the country so far.
Where will you be holding up to write the book this year?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've got a couple of ideas that might keep me here. They're not really sort of travel per se, but I am later this year going back to Italy to do the Way of St. Francis. You know, people do the Camino in Spain. I'm going to walk the Way of St. Francis in
Umbria. And talk to the birds.
And talk to the birds. Hopefully the birds will talk back. Do a doodle.
You need to go to Disneyland for that.
Whoops.
That's where the birds talk back. The animatronic. So, Joe, you were talking about interesting furnishings in Pisa. I'm not unaware of this.
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh, I just remember one of the restaurants that I had a fantastic kind of, you know, degustation in. All of the furniture had been hand-carved, but multiple generations from the one family.
Wow.
And it was absolutely stunning.
Wow.
And I distinctly remember one of the dishes was a gnocchi that had, I think it was walnuts and truffle.
Okay, yep.
And the people on the table next to me were American, and she didn't like it. So I bribed the waiter to take her unfinished gnocchi and replate it back in the kitchen and give it to me.
I had a similar thing. I was in.
That's brilliant.
I couldn't bear those soft pillows. Somewhere else. No, I had to come back.
No, in Pisa, same thing. I was in this seafood restaurant, and they made this beautiful fish stew, and the seafood was so fresh. It was, you know, almost alive, and the sauce was so rich. And there were Americans sitting next to us saying, "Oh, it's just too fancy for us. You know, the flavors are too
rich."
It's like, this is why you get bad at food at tourist restaurants, you know.
But that's part of what they brought with them to go through the experience. Their jumping off point was quite different to ours, or most of our listeners. So for them to eat food that was so uncomfortable must have been quite a challenge, because they didn't bring the culture with them to enjoy and experience in a positive way. It was intimidating and challenging.
Yeah, at least they gave it a crack. And that's, you know,
but that's what you learn in travel, right? Yeah. Some people would have taken that to like a fish to water. Some people are just like, no, I just don't have enough resources to process this.
Yeah.
On my plate.
Yeah, there's a lot of options out there in the world, and
But I mean, even just some plain breads and so forth are good enough with a bit of oil in Italy. I mean,
yummy.
And as you mentioned earlier, sometimes it's actually just having the time to take notice of the change in the light. And,
yes,
you know, and we've got beautiful light here in Melbourne, but we live here and we work here, so we don't experience it the same way.
Yeah, I grew up here, but I lived in Sydney for, 17 years or something. And it was always interesting for me to come back here and see how different the light. Mm. I became acutely aware of the difference in the light in Melbourne, how much softer it is. And, you know, the grey of the bluestone, how that really informs. And it informs the way you respond to a city too. Mm-hmm. You know, Sydney has that sort of golden glow, so everybody thinks, you know, life's golden up there.
Or tacky.
Oh, well, yes.
You know what it would look like if we drained the harbour?
I'm staying stumm. But I agree with you. When I spent recently 6 years away. When I came back, Melbourne's winter light, because it was just at the end of autumn, really struck me from the harshness of the brightness of the Middle East, and then came back to this gorgeous bluey light and the gold of a cold winter morning.
Yeah.
Especially down St Kilda Road with those beautiful plane trees that have lost all their leaves. And the slight mist, it just made me fall in love with home.
6 years in the Middle East is a really good crack.
Yeah, I got paralysis. Oh my gosh.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Right now we've got Julietta Jamieson, travel writer. I'm not going to go through the rest. Gelati lover.
Saucy minx.
Saucy minx. Strapping young Italian man at the front desk. Teaser. Yes, with food.
With my talk of food.
Mm.
Although he just came in here and told us about the risotto he's got in his fridge, and I'm so jealous.
Yeah, so we're all looking forward to the evening.
A little hungry.
Yeah. So what do you think the big travel stories are coming up? I mean, you've got your finger on the pulse. You're a paid travel writer. You do this for a career. You can spot the trends. What's coming up? What's 2015 got?
Look, I think we touched on it before, that cruising is just huge and the ships are getting bigger and things are getting more extravagant. And my question about that is how much is too much, where it stops, does it stop? You know, who are these things catering for? I mean, certainly for.
And what about passenger etiquette? I mean, do people know how to behave on a cruise?
They do, and things have changed dramatically since the mishaps that occurred several years ago. There's sort of the law on board these days is a lot stronger. But, you know, the bigger the ships get, the harder it is to, I guess, police that kind of thing. And the thing, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of cruising. I do it because it's part of my job, because I think it's important as a travel writer to be across what people like to do. But I see that people, there's something for everyone. So I don't go into the casinos. I'm not the person that's up late in the nightclubs and that kind of thing. But some people absolutely
adore
it.
You don't buy your
art
on cruise ships?
No, but plenty of people do. And they put a lot of money.
Is this velvet-based art?
No. The last cruise I was on, there were French, you know, there was Matisse. There was
for real?
Art worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. It was incredible. So that was one of those really high-end cruises.
Right.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's absolute, because, I mean, they've got you as a captive audience. So shopping, doing spa treatments.
That I get, yeah. But I'm surprised about the art. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big, big thing. And then the
because I always see people that couldn't get a job in a band playing the piano on a cruise ship.
Well, that's not the case either. I think
is it
that
really
some of the
upmarket.
Well, first of all, there are cultural cruises, and there are gay cruises, yep. And but there's music cruises, so there's country and western cruises, there's disco cruises, there's all sorts of things. But the level of entertainers now is phenomenal. I mean, there's only so many opera houses in the world, and quite often the people who are singing on board the better ships are actually extremely talented and have, you know, really good credentials. So that has changed.
Well, it's a more relaxing way for them to tour as well.
Yeah, and they get to see, and they don't have to pay tax. So they get to see the world and not pay tax.
So what governs a vessel?
It's international maritime until you get into port, and then it's the local
law. Law of the land.
Mm. Huh. And what are the other big travel stories coming up in 2015?
Well, sustainability is still a very, very huge thing, but also I think it's becoming to mean more. It's becoming, you know, it's no longer enough to say that you're a green hotel and please recycle your bath towels. The new hotels that are opening this year just have incredible facilities to be self-sustaining and to have light footprint, and so that I think is huge. But at the same time, not compromising the luxury experience.
Right. What about the shared economy? Is the Airbnbs of the world, the sort of community crowd surfing thing, is that going to continue to grow?
I think
so. Peak.
I mean, it might have peaked because there's all the, you know, the talk still continues about the legalities of these things. Mm. But you know, I see new ones opening all the time, like new apps, things for, you know, more high end houses, and so it's diversifying.
Yeah, the genie's out of the bottle, and I
certainly
think the technology is embedded, and no one's going to turn off the interwebs anytime soon.
Right? No,
yeah,
no.
That's exactly it.
That train has sailed, as they say.
Absolutely.
Those confused people, they do say that.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Julietta Jamison, travel writer, what's your number one tip for travellers when they're on the road?
Oh, golly. Be patient, most of all with yourself.
That's very mindful.
Yeah, mindfulness. Yeah. That's exactly it. I think mindfulness is very important to stay safe and to keep your belongings safe. But it's also, you know, the whole thing of being in the moment and just not losing. It's the best way to not lose your cool is to just understand that sometimes you're going to feel a bit frazzled and you might want to go get some takeaway and go and hide in your room for a night. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, I think quite often it's that telltale phrase, I did something I never normally do.
Oh,
got
I've done
those.
Got
me into trouble.
Yes.
Oopa days. Well, thank you very much for joining us on Joy 94.9 for Escape Pod. Stick with us all afternoon. We've got Fresh Air coming up with Dean and Claire and their Summer Lovin'. And we'd love to have you back again. Well, I know they've got a million stories to talk about as a travel writer, and we'd love to see you on Joy 94.9 again, Julietta Jamison.
Thank you. I'd love to come back.
Yeah, I might do a masterclass on air.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a great idea. So if you want to know more about writing and blogging, and I don't know if you specialise in blogging or is that all part of the
vibes? I can talk about it.
Kind of like fan fiction for travel writers.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, you guys are so succinct.
That's the first time we've been called that.
But that's the medication.
Lots of things going here in Joy 94.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.